On daf pei vav amid aleph, five lines up from the bottom of the daf, and that's Toshma. And we're discussing now is the statement the halacha that dvarim shedarkam bagba, that things, items that are generally lifted, they're small in nature, require a kinyan hagba to the exclusion of kinyan meshicha. And the Gemara tried to undermine this principle and contradict it based on the Mishnah in Ksubis about Kimle B'Drabine, as we discussed in the previous shiur. Now the Gemara asks from the Brisa of Arba Midos, the Brisa that's brought on Daf Peheim and Aleph, Toshma, and there the din number three was that if the Mida with Peros, in other words, the measuring utensil for peros is Bershus Mocher, is Lo Kona Achiak Bihenu O Achiotzi Eno Mirshuso. It means that there are two possible kinyonim that can be effectuated with regard to peros. One is Hagbah and the other is Meshicha. Yotzi Eno Mirshuso means he drags it out of his Rishus, and that's called Meshicha. Alma, we see from this Brisa, Midi debar hagbah, if something, or shall we say, despite the fact that something is subject to hagbah, iboy b'hagbah konile, iboy b'meshicha konile. He has two options. He can be kona with hagbah, or he could be kona with meshicha. And that proves that even something which lends itself to hagbah does not require hagbah and only hagbah as the exclusive kinyan, but it lends itself to an additional alternative kinyan, namely to Meshicha. And that seems to be a blatant contradiction to what we've been saying until now, in the name of Rav Chisda, or alternatively, in the name of Rav Kahana. Some say it in the name of Rava, that entire tradition and transmission, that the kinyan is hagbah and not meshicha. Meshicha is not a valid kinyan since it lends itself to a kinyan hagbah. And the Gemara now answers, Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, the Braisa doesn't mean to say that the same exact kli lends itself to both a kinyan hagbah or alternatively a kinyan meshicha, but rather it's tzadim katani. That we have to understand the Braisa as referring to two different kalim. You have to separate and wedge between one part of this Braisa and the other part of this Braisa. So when the Braisa speaks about Hagbah, it's addressing the case of Midi Debar Hagbah, something which lends itself to Hagbah. And then it says Achig Benu. When it says in the Sefer Achi Otzienu Mershuso, that's referring to a midi debar meshicha, meaning something which is not darko lagbia, maybe it's too heavy, but rather it's darko b'meshicha, and therefore meshicha is the valid kinyan. The Rashbam writes that the Gemara could have given an answer that the Brice is talking about something that's very heavy and is not usually lifted, that's why it lends itself to kinyan meshicha. But if he desires to put in all the extra effort and pick it up and lift it, then he could be kona with hagbah, because hagbah is the super kinyan that applies for every single object, says the Rashbam. But the Gemara wanted to teach us two dinim. One is that something that lends itself to hagbah on a normal way, not with any extra effort, is eino nikne b'meshicha. Meshicha is not relevant. And number two, something which is generally schlepped, is dragged, that's meshicha, can also be acquired through hagbah. This, by the way, incurs the wrath of the Raifit. The Raifit disagrees with Rashbam, and he's of the opinion that something that's not darko b'hagbah, and generally you do it with meshicha, doesn't have the alternative, doesn't lend itself to a kinyan hagbah. So the Raifit doesn't buy into this thesis that hagbah is the universal, absolute super kinyan. The Gemara now asks from our Mishnah on the Shita of Rav Huna, etc., that Dvarim Shadarkam Hagbah Einu Niknim B'Mashiach HaTashma, our Mishnah back on Daf Pei Dalet Amid Beis states that HaMocher Peros L'Chavero, if someone sells fruits or grains to his friend, is Moshach V'lo Modad. If he does Mashiach HaMashiach alone, that means he didn't weigh out exactly the volume that he's purchasing, Kani, nevertheless, he was Kona. And the Mishnah explicitly is addressing the case of Peros. So the Gemara says, but Peros, the Bnei Akbar Ninhu, Peros are light, they're not heavy, it's very easy, therefore, to lift them up. Uktani, nevertheless, the Mishnah says, the Kani b'Mashicha. It's explicit here that Mashicha works even to something that's a bar, Hagbah. And the Rashbam talks about the logic of this Makshan, that the Mishnah is talking about a case of a very limited volume of Peros that are subject to Mashicha. And maybe in this case we're talking about something that's not too heavy for Hagbah. And the reason for that is because the Sefer, as we'll soon see, is referring to Pishtan, and there the Mishnah changes its language and says Harei ze lo kana achi taltaleno bimakom lemakom. So let's see the Gemara and we'll try to clarify this as we go along. In any event, the Mishnah clearly indicates that with regard to Peros, which is certainly something that we assume can be lifted, nevertheless the Kini Mashiach is valid. Hochamai Askino, the Gemara answers, then the Mishnah is talking about a specific situation, Bishlife Rav Rave. We're talking about a large basket or package full of grains that's very, very heavy. The volume is great, and therefore it's something that's too heavy to be lifted, and that's why it's nicknames b'mashicha. The Gemara is not happy with this answer at all. Ihachi, says the Gemara, is seifa. Let's take a look at the seifa. If you're telling me that the Mishnah is talking about a massive volume of grains that it's too heavy to that forms something that's too heavy to be lifted, is Ema Sefer, when the Mishnah says in the Sefer Alokeach Pishtan Mechavero Lokana Adshi Taltalena Mi Mokom Ze Le Mokom Acher, that in the case of Pishtan the Mishnah says that you really have to do a much more radical, or shall we say substantial, type of Mashicha. It's not your classical Mashicha. You have to make sure that you move it from one place to the other. And the only way you could do that, presumably, Yitaltalena mi makom zel makom acher, is through Hagbah. And since the Mishnah mentions a Kiyan Hagbah, it must be talking about small items that lend themselves to Hagbah. And yet you're telling me that in the Reisha, we're talking about a massive volume of grains, such that the weight is such that it's impossible to do Hagbah. But clearly in the case of Pishtan, we're talking about something that that is Chavilos Ktanos, and therefore the Mishnah requires that more substantial, radical kind of a Mashicha, which is Hagbah. So what kind of what volume is this Mishnah? How do we describe the volume or the nature of the merchandise of the Peros that are being acquired in this Mishnah? Are we dealing with Chavilos Gedolos, as you wanted to say, Shlifei Rav Ravei, that don't lend themselves to Hagbah? Are we talking about small volume, small amounts, in the case of Pishta and the Sefer, that lend themselves to Hagbah? And Anshi Tathlenu Mimoka Lemoka means to lift it from one place, put it down in another place. Otu Pishtan Bishlife Rave Milo Avdi. Isn't it possible, just as we saw in the case of grains, to package it up in large, heavy, heavy bundles, the same thing is possible in the case of Pishtan. We can take Pishtan, this flax, and we can bind it together in large bundles. And if that be the case, the Mishnah makes no sense in requiring Hagbah in the case of Pishtan, because you're talking about large, heavy bundles. In other words, Bishlema, it would have made sense to interpret this Mishnah that the Mishnah is talking about a limited volume of peros that are light in weight and not heavy. And now we can understand very well the difference between peros, where a regular classical mashicha is sufficient, and in contrast, Pishtan in the Sefer, that you have to do this more substantial, radical kind of mashicha. And it would have been understood, because flax is very long, and in a sense, you're not really doing a mashicha ad shetaltalena. You need a hagbah type of mashicha. That doesn't make sense according to the Taratzon. You can't, the Taratzon that just gave the answer of Bishlifei Ravarvei cannot really justify the difference between the ratio of peros, where the Mishnah establishes that Mashicha is valid, as opposed to the Sefer of Pishtan, which requires a much more radical Hagbah. There's no justification for that, because what is the Taratzon telling me? The Taratzon is telling me that in the ratio of Peros, the reason why Mashicha is operative is because we're talking about Chavilos Gedolos. So then, when we get to the case of Pishtan, why isn't Mashicha sufficient? There could be the same kind of situation of Chavilos Gedolos, of these very large, heavy packages. If you're talking about, on the other hand, Chavilos Ktanos, which don't usually lend themselves to the Mashicha, then why does the Mishnah mention that kind of situation in the case of Pishtan and not something parallel in the case of Peros? So that the small kind of Chavilos, the small light Chavilos in the Sefer of Pishtan should be paralleled in the Resha by small and light bundles or volumes of Peros. Why did the Mishnah choose to talk about Pishtan in Chavilos Ktanos? It should have spoken about Pishtan in Chavilos Gedolos to parallel the Resha. So this differentiation in the Mishnah between the Resha of Peros and the Sefer of Pishtan makes no sense if you're talking about Chavilos Gedolos, because Chavilos Gedolos, the Mishnah should have been consistent, applied that to Pishtan as well, and Mashicha should have been sufficient. The fact that in the Sefer, in the case of Pishtan, we're talking about Chavilos Ktanos, which lend themselves to Hagbah, we should have, in a parallel way, the Mishnah should have formulated Peros in Chavilos Ktanos. Why Beravarvei? And the Gemara answers, Shiny Pishtan. The nature of Pishtan is such that it's not usually you don't combine the chavilos of Pishtan into large chavilos, into large bindings. And why is that so? The mishtamet, because it has the nature of being slippery. And if you tie it into large bundles, then a lot of the flax is going to slip out of its bindings. And therefore, the normal way of packaging flax is by putting it into small bundles. And if they're small bundles, then in the case of flax, it can be easily lifted, and therefore the only relevant kinyan is going to be hagbah. That's not so in the case of peros. The Rashbam here quotes another commentary, a pirush of Rabbeinu Hananel, who says that the Gemara's answer is that we don't usually do Mashicha on Pishtan. It doesn't matter what size the bundles are. They can be large bundles, they can be small bundles. But the nature of Pishtan of flax is that it's very soft, and What happens is, if you start dragging it, then it's misnatek v'nikra. It falls apart because of its very soft nature, and it gets ripped apart. And therefore, when it comes to Pishtan, we're talking about Chavilus Gedolos. And Chavilus Gedolos, nevertheless, are not so large that you can expect that only Mashiach works, but rather Ein Derech L'Moshchan, says Rabbeinu Chananel. This is a little bit of the weak point of Rabbeinu Chananel, but we still lift them up. But again, the reason why Chavilus Gedolos are generally used, commonly used for Pishtan, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, is because of the nature Shehem Rach, because they're soft, and when you gather together a large volume of flax, there's less of a chance that the bundles will fall apart. We mentioned before that according to the Rashbam, the Makshan was of the opinion that the Mishnah is differentiating between a smaller amount of peros, where all you would need is a regular Mashicha, a classical, what we call a Mashicha Kala, Kala with a Kuf, as opposed to a small amount of Pishtan, where you need a more significant Mashicha Gedola. But in any event, it is quite clear from the Rashbam that Mashicha is operative, is valid in a small amount of Peros, even though the possibility is also, and the Derech is also, to lift them up. The Tarzan, on the other hand, explains that we're talking about Peros Merubin, we're talking about these Chavilus Gedolos, Kvedos, She'ein Derech like Bion, that generally you wouldn't be able to lift them up. And the Mishnah changes its language in the from the Reish of Peros to the Sefer of Pishtan, because in the case of Pishtan, the general method that's popular and common is to make Chavilus Ketanos, smaller bundles of Pishtan. And those are things which are generally lifted up. The Gemara now again asks Akasha and raises an objection against this whole school of thought that Dovah Shadarka Lagbia Eino Nikne B'Mashicha Amalei Ravina Ravashi Toshma. Let's look at the Mishnah Maseth Kedushin with regard to what kinyanim are valid vis-a-vis an animal. You want to acquire ownership on an animal, and the Mishnah divides the animal kingdom into two categories. The first category, which is typical of the very large animals like an ox or a cow, behemagasa, is niknes b'mesira. That means the seller hands over to the buyer the animal and the chevel, the rope that's attached to the animal, it's around its neck, or b'sa'ara, perhaps it's attached to some of the hairs on the animal. And that's what it says in Kiddushin. That's the way a person is, the lokeach is kone, a behema gas, a large animal. Ve'hadaka, but in the case of a small animal like a sheep or a ram, a smaller animal, is bagba. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, in that Mishnah Kiddushin, insist that Hagba is the exclusive kinyan with regard to Behema Daka, because these animals are lighter in weight and they lend themselves to lifting. But Chachamim Omrim Behema Daka B'Mashicha, that the kinyan that's valid for Behema Daka, for a smaller animal like a sheep, is Mashicha. Now, we have a question from this Shita of the Chachamim, the latter Shita. Habehema daka, certainly in the case of a smaller animal, debarak boy, it lends itself to lifting. You can certainly pull it up, pick it up off the ground. And that's exactly what Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon said. That's what you have to do. But the Chacham Sektoni, they insist, the Kani B'Mashicha, that despite the fact that these smaller animals lend themselves to Hagbah, nevertheless the kinyan of Mashicha is valid. So you see that even though it's a darko, the Hagbah, nevertheless, it's nicknames b'mashicha, shiny behemoth. The Gemara answers, no. Behemoth is different. Who goes around lifting behemoths? Why? Disarcha. When you try to lift up an animal, it's very difficult to lift it up. The animal clings to the ground. You know, there's a resistance from the live animal. And therefore, try to pick up an animal, even if it only weighs 20 pounds, nevertheless, it's a difficult task. And therefore, Hagbah is not the general... Again, it doesn't mean that Hagbah is excluded. Hagbah would also be valid. But nevertheless, Meshicha is the general way in which you would take the animal into your possession. The Rashbam here quotes again Rabbeinu Hananel, who says that the word sarcha means sroch now. And that you'll see in the Targum in Breishis Yudalit Chof Gimel, sroch now, which is a shoelace that you use to tie down a shoe to the leg. And so too, a behema, it ties itself down, clings to the karak, as it were. He also quotes Rabbeinu Hananel that sircha is miloshon soretes. Soretes es habolak bia. That the animal will, you know, when you come to pick it up and the hooves of the animal are on your arms, it's going to scratch your arms. And if it's better to do meshicha, that's a safer way to pull an animal rather than lift it. There's a Cheshek Shlomo here who writes that from Rabbeinu Gershon, he gets the impression that he understood Rabbeinu Gershon, that the question of the Gemara was from Rabbi Meir, not from the Chacham. Rabbi Meir says that a behema daka nikneis behagbah, even though, as we saw in the Gemara, one wouldn't lift up even a behema daka. And therefore, according to those Amoraim that we've been discussing all along, that Dovashem Darko Bagbar Niknes B'Meshicha, Rabbeinu Gershon understood that Meshicha is the exclusive Kenyan in a case of a Dovashem Darko Behagbar. And the Gemara's answer is Shiny Behema de Misracha, that it's very difficult to schlep the animal. Meshicha Sebehema Daka is very difficult. Why? Why is it so challenging? Because when you try to drag the animal forward, he misareches lazuz, or misareves, I think you lazuz. The animal, again, resists movement, and it recoils, it withdraws backwards in a backwards motion. And as a result, the animal will never lift up its four legs and its hind legs. And therefore, it may hold that you need hagbah. At this point, the Gemara now quotes a statement of Rav and Shmuel, and the Gemara is going to ask and raise a kash on Rav and Shmuel to object to their statement from the Brice of Arba Midos. Rav Ushmuel Diyami Chavayim. According to Rav and Shmuel, there are two ways that the mocher could sell a certain volume of, in this case, solids. Later on, we'll get to liquids. The mocher could either sell it as one sale for an entire volume, or he can sell it piecemeal. And there are many different mini kinyanim on each smaller volume. So what determines whether he's selling the entire volume as one entity, or there are many different sales that relate to each small section? It depends how the mocher formulated the kinyan. What did he say to the lokeh? If he said, number one, kar. Now kar, we have to keep this in mind, is equal to 30 saw. Okay, so he's selling him 30 saw of grain, bishloshim slun, for 30 slun. Now, if you do the math, it's very easy to figure out that he's selling him one saw for a sella. Ani mocher lecha, but he never specified that he is agreeing to sell a saw. He's selling 30 saw, which is a car. And let's say all the other elements and ingredients that make up a kinyan and validate the kinyan are existent. For example, the mocher starts measuring out this grain in the kli of the lokeach, and the kli of the lokeach is in the chatzar of the lokeach. Everything is set and worthy, suitable for the kinyan to be valid. Nevertheless, say Rav and Shmuel, the kinyan is not clinched. Yochel lachzer bo, the seller can still say, as long as the last the last saw of the 30 saw has not been measured out in the lokeach utensil. Lots of what you can decide. I want to rescind my agreement, retract this kinyan, and invalidate it. Afilu b'saw achrona, even when they counted out and weighed 29 out of 30 saw, since they haven't yet measured out the last saw of the 30 in the kli. In the kli medida, the measuring utensil of the lokeach, therefore the kinyan is not complete. Meaning that Rav and Shmuel insist that in this case, when he mentioned that he's selling a kur, a total indivisible volume of 30 saw for the price of 30 saw, that means it's one sale on everything. And until the kinyan was made on the very last saw of the 30 saw, the kinyan is not complete. Again, we have to know things here about Minigam Mokom. I don't know if you remember that before Pesach we spoke about Minigam Mokom. Everything depends upon Minog HaMokom. But let's assume the Minigam Mokom is to determine, or to specify, I should say, the price for the Sa'im. And they say, Kach v'kach Sloim l'kol Se'ah. So if usually, generally, it's done by Seah, and you mentioned the price per Seah, and now he went ahead and the seller and offered a price for 30 Seah, which is a kur, then the situation changes, and the kinyan is chal as one mechira, one sale on the entire indivisible entity or unit called 30 Seah, or called a kur. And therefore the kinyan is not effective until the very last Seah. Very less so. Fine. Now we get to the Sefer, and that's going to occupy our minds in the next sugya, in the Hemshech, I should say, of this sugya. And what did the Mocher say to Lokech? In this case, he said, Kur Bishloshim, but he didn't stop there. He just didn't say that he's selling him 30 saw for 30 slim, but rather he said, Saw Bisela. Each saw is being sold for a selah, and he added that, stipulated that statement. Ani mocher l'cha. And therefore, rishon kona. Now, he has indicated the mocher that he wants to sell each saw individually, and there could be a complete valid kinyan on each saw as an individual kinyan. In such a case, then any time, any amount or volume that the lokeach makes a kinyan on, you know, means he measures it into his kli and his rishus, he automatically clinches that kinyan, and the mocher can't retract that kinyan and invalidate it. Because here the kpeid is not on 30 saw, but on each saw at the price of a selah. And each saw becomes, as we said before, an independent kinyan, and can be clinched with a kinyan on that saw. And the Gemara is not happy about this, because the Gemara quotes the Brice of Arba Midos back from Pei Heyom and Aleph, and then the second din in the Arba Midos, it says, Im Hoysa Midah Shal Echad Mehem is Rishon Rishon Kana. The Brisa makes a general statement that Rishon Rishon Kana, that means if the Midah belongs to the Lokeach, for example, and he measures out a certain volume that went into his Kli, he makes an absolute Kinyan, an absolute acquisition, and that particular midah that he measured out is already knuyalo because he owns the kli. Again, we're talking about the kli belonging to the lokeach. Is v'afal gav delo nismalo hamidah? The brisa doesn't make any stipulations. It says rishon rishon kana means he didn't get to the point where he measured out the entire kur, but rather, whatever amount he measures out, that is sufficient. This is against Rav and Shmuel, because in lotus mala midah, if he didn't get to that full midah, even though the sale was on a certain midah, but rishon rishon kana, it means that we can still divide up the kinyan into its component parts. Now, how much more so in the case of Rav and Shmuel, where he sells him a kur bishloshim, and he's already measured out 29 out of 30 saw, certainly the lokeach should be kona on each midah, and rishon rishon kona. And the Gemara answers, no. What's the brisa discussing? Kigon di amar le, where the mocher said to the lokeach, hin Now we're talking about liquid measurements. Till now we've been talking about solids. A hin is 12 lug. B'shneimasar slaim, at 12 slaim, which means that log b'sela ani mochelecha. I'm sorry, I should have had the words which means, because what the Gemara is answering, the Kimta to the Gemara, is that these are the words that came out of the mouth of the Mocha. The Mocha added the words of lug b'sela, which is exactly parallel to the case of sa b'sela. And by mentioning lug b'sela, he means to say that there's a separate kinyan on each log. And we don't have to wait till the entire 12 logim, the entire hin, has been sold. So even Rav and Shmuel, who say that you can make a kinyan on each saw unto itself, in the case where he specifies the value at which he's selling each saw, the same thing here, he specifies the value of each log, and he says, I'm selling you each log at a sela, that makes it a separate kinyan. And therefore, if there was a medida on that log, that itself clinches the kinyan. Ukida Omar Rav Kahana, and the Gemara says we find a similar parallel statement of Rav Kahana with regard to the mida, the way they measured out liquid measurements in the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, we're talking about shemen, oil in a sachim, and each carbon has its own amount. For example, the Rashbam points out that there are certain carbonos that the midas HaShemen, the amount, the volume, measurement of shemen is for the sachem chatziyahin, which means six lugim. There are other cases where all you need is a shlish hin for the sachem, and that means four lugim. There is also a revi hin, which is shlosha lugim. There are many different carbonos. And Rav Kahana says the following, that shnasos hayu bahin, that this kli, this utensil that was used to measure out the oil and make sure it was exactly the amount that they needed that was required for that particular carbon for the nesachim, that kli had blitos on it. The dofen akli had blitos. What that means is that there were markings inside the kli, and each marking, each blita, represented a different mida, a different volume of a log. In other words, here's one log, here's another log, it's not like we have measuring cups. And this was the way that they were able to measure out the exact amount of shemen for each carbon, the sheer shemen that was necessary for each carbon for the nesachim. Now Tosfos here, Dibra Maskil Kido Omar, is a little bit confused here as to what the chiddush of Rav Kahana is. There's actually an explicit Mishnah in Masechta Menachos in the name of Rabbi Lezer Rab Tzadik, that shnasos hayu behin. I don't need Rav Kahana for that. So what was the chiddush here of Rav Kahana? Tosfos points out, in the name of the Ri, that the Gemara means to say that Rav Kahana was mechadish, that even in kelim that weren't sanctified, it wasn't a kli shares, nevertheless they made these markings, these blitos, these shnasos, and that's the way the Gemara describes in Masechta Shabbos Daf Pei Amud Beis, the shear of sid, which is used for Meleches Hotzah, it was the shear that would be enough for the shnasos, you know, to reach this marking and so forth and so on. And therefore the Gemara is applying the principle of Rav Kahana to a general case of measuring out logim, in this case liquid measurements, and every log that enters into this kli of medida of the lokeach is considered a complete kinyan unto itself. And why is that a nika? How is it recognizable that this is a certain particular volume, exactly that volume of the liquid that he's buying? Let's say, for example, a log. The answer is it's nikar as a result of these shnosos in the kli. In any event, what it comes out here is that we're discussing in this brisa a case that is exactly parallel to kar b'shloshim slaim but saw b'sela. And if he has saw b'sela, or in this case it's a lug b'sela, then it becomes rishon rishon kana. At this point, the Gemara raises an objection against Rav and Shmuel from a different brisa. And here we really have to put on our not just our thinking caps, but our imaginary, imagination, the koch, that faculty called imagination becomes very critical here, because you have to imagine how the Gemara came up with this ostensibly far off analogy. The Gemara now is stretching its arm out all the way to the laws of Ribbis. Now, by way of introduction, of course, Ribbis d'oraisa means that Reuven lends Shimon an amount and he expects to be paid back that amount plus. But then there's something called Ribbis d'rabbanan, which is otherwise known as Agar Notar. Agar Notar in Hebrew is Schar Hamtonas Mos, meaning you reward someone because he's waiting for you to repay the loan. So if he gives you an extension of time to pay that loan, to pay up and live up to his responsibility for that extra waiting period of time, he gives you some sort of benefit, some sort of reward. That's a Ribbis d'Rabbanan, which is called Agar Notar. And that's the subject of the Braisa of Asokras HaPoel, which we're about to learn. And again, the key question here is, when there are two seasons and the employees, the laborers, get paid different amounts at different seasons, right? There's a high season where you pay a high price, and there's a low season where there's much less work, and you pay usually a fraction of the price. Now, if the employer, if the balabais will advance money to the laborer for work that he's going to do later, and he's going to offer the laborer a cheaper price based on this period of time when the price to hire this laborer is low, even though the laborer is not going to work until 6 months down the line, in the high season, then basically he's paying a fraction of what he really should pay for that work. The employee, from his perspective, the laborer, is going to offer work at a cheap price, and the reason for that is because he's getting paid in advance. So he's basically giving a benefit that's called agar notar to the employer. Excuse me. So let's go through the braisa inside, and then we have to see, whether or not when the price, or the wage, I should say, was set, was it set in such a way that it covers an entire period of time as one block, or was the wage set for individual sections of time, for a daily wage. If it's a daily wage, then that, the Gemara thinks in its imagination, is very parallel, very much similar to the case of Rishon Kona, where according to Rav and Shmuel, if he specifies sub the sella, then he's not buying 30 sub for 30 sell, he's buying one sub for one sella. And that would give us a great advantage as far as Ribbis is concerned, because if we can view this entire block of time as one period of time, then we don't have to break it down into its component parts, and lo and behold, the laborer is getting paid a cheaper amount for work that he's doing at a later time. No, it's all one general rubric. So what does the Braisa say? Toshma hasocher sapoel. Now, the cheaper period of time is Nisan. Okay? Nisan is lasos imo begoren. Goren means the granary. That's the more expensive time. That's when they do the katsira. And in Nisan, you pay a laborer a very high price. And it's basically four times the price that you would pay for work now, let's say 6 months earlier, way before the harvest season. The harvest season, the laborers demand a very high price for their very hard work. Now, what the Balbais does is, he is hiring him for work that he should do Bishas HaGoren later on in Nisan, but he's hiring him much earlier in advance, and he says to him, Hayom B'dinar, I'm going to pay you per day one full dinar, which a dinar is one quarter of a sela. A sela is four dinrim. So work that's done in the period of the katsir of the harvest season, in high season, high as far as the price you pay labor, is four times the price, it's a full sela, of what you would pay him during low season. And he's going to hire him for work to be done at high season at a daily rate of 1 dinar, because he's giving the worker, the laborer, in advance money. And the work is going to cost the balabais here only 1 dinar per day instead of 1 seller, which is 4 dinarim per day. And the reason for that is because he, the balabais, wants to get some benefit, and the laborer, from his perspective, is willing to offer that benefit, that special deal, because he wants to be paid in advance. So he's going to be paid in advance for work at a 25% rate of what that work is worth in its time period. And what's the din in such a case? Here we turn to Daf Pei Zayin Omid Aleph. Our goal for today is to get to the Mishnah on Pei Zayin Omid Aleph. And the Mishnah says, Vilagorin, meaning the Shas Hagorin, when the Mechir, the going rate, is estimated in the market for Polim at a very high rate, and a daily labor in that period of time during the Goren, during the harvest season, is Yofes Sela, it's worth 4 times a dinar. So basically just to get the facts down on the ground, the worker, the laborer, is willing to take a lower price because of the advance that he gets for the money, that the money is being given to him way in advance. Hiktim loses los hamos kvar. He gives it way before the harvest season, as early as Nisan, is osur lehenel simimena. The balabais is not allowed to enjoy this labor, because that labor at this cheap price is the benefit that he's getting for the loan that is being extended by paying in advance to the laborer, by laying out the money in advance. And basically, by laying out the money in advance, he is giving a loan to the laborer, and the laborer is paying back with work that's worth 4 times the amount of money that he's actually gotten. That's a tremendous benefit. That's already nira karibis. So by working at this reduced salary, the laborer is basically repaying the loan with interest. And that is asur. Avol, but the b'risa continues. In the sefer, it says, im scharo me hayom, let's say early in advance, way before the harvest season. Let's say 100 days before, for example, in advance. He says, me hayom, he says, I want you to work daily from today, for the next 100 days, that swallows up also the harvest period, but dinar liyom, I'm going to pay you 1 dinar per day. Vilagoren, and even though during the Shas Hagoren, when he's still working, because that's still within the 100 days, Yofesela, that work is worth on a daily basis a full seller for dinrim. Nevertheless, Mutta, the Balbais, allowed to do so, because since the Poel began his work immediately, we view the 100 days as one long period of time. Kipa'ula achas. It's one pa'ula. It's one period of employment. The payment is not considered a loan, therefore, because ein hakesef shekibam balabais nirik haribis, because now those days of harvest in which the employer is getting work from the employee at a fraction of the value, that's swallowed up in the original agreement. So we see this as one schirus, as one pu'ula, that combines the 100-day period into one entity, and that's not called nirik ribis. That doesn't look like ribis. And therefore, it is permissible. And here's where the Gemara swings around with a great deal of imagination and raises an objection to Rav and Shmuel. V'isalkadai, if Rav and Shmuel are correct, that if a person says, this is the Mocher, he's talking to Loketh, and he says, kor bishloshim, and then he adds, saw b'sela, ani mocher l'cha, I'm really selling you each saw at a sela, then rishon kana. Then in such a case, the intention of the mocher is not to sell one kur and dafka one kur as one entity, but rather you can divide it up into individual saw. Every saw itself is a separate, independent mechira. If that be the case, hachinami, here too, what did he say? If you take a look carefully at the brisa, the employer said to the employee, "Me hayom, start working today. Bidiner liyom, I'm going to pay you one dinar per day. Is therefore kama mifsik pasach. We have to view every day, since he explicitly spelled out how much he's paying him per day. Every day therefore becomes a schiris unto itself. It's not one long schiris, one long pa'ula of 100 days that's indivisible, but rather we break it up into its component parts. In fact, the halacha would be in such a case, and this I want to emphasize, that the poel, from his perspective, yachal lachzer bo, he could do one day's work and not show up for tomorrow's work and say, I quit, I'm out of here. Why? Because he's being paid per day. And why is that so? Because the Baal HaBayis said to the poel, bidinar layom, I'm paying you one dinar per day. So if that be the case, if he's paying him per day, then how could the Braisa tell us in the Sefer, when he said to him, Ayom, Bidinar Layom, that he's allowed to pay him a quarter of the value of his labor for the work that he's going to do in the Goren season, in the harvest season, even though he's paying him one dinar per day. So that every day of the harvest season is a separate pe'ilus, a separate pu'ula, and is a separate independent agreement on every day. If that be the case, there certainly is a violation of Nira Karibis. The Gemara spells this out. Again, there's a question here of how to read the Girsa in the Gemara. Also, Lehenos Vimena Bedina, it should be also to do this. Why? Because since he said to him, Mehayom Bedina, those are the key words, Mehayom Bedina or Bedina Layom, that would be a more precise quote of the Braisa. And even though he started working today, Velagoren Yafis Sela, but during the period of time, those days in which he works during the harvest season, it's worth 4 dinarim per day. Mutter? It should be Mutter? Amai? How could it be Mutter? Agarnaterli, who? Agarnater is a quote. This is the coin, the phrase of Nira Karibis. He's basically rewarding him for waiting to replay the loan. In other words, there's a loan being extended in which most are given in advance to the employee, and that is money that's given per day for these 100 days, a large chunk of which includes the shnos hagore, the time for harvest, for katsira, and instead of paying him a full seller, which is 4 dinar, he's only going to pay him 1 dinar, and the worker, the laborer, from his perspective, is more than happy to accept this arrangement because he's getting his money in advance. Why is this not, therefore, a violation of agar notarli, which is ribis derabonin, scharam todesmo, so reward for being, for delaying the payment, the repayment of the loan? And it's all is objectionable within the framework of Rav and Shmuel, who say that if you say sa b'sela, you've broken down the mechira into individual sa's, and here too, you've broken down the employment into individual days because you're paying him per day. And that would mean that the only reason he's paying him per day in the days of the harvest season is because of the advancement of the loan. He's giving him more time to repay the loan. Meaning, the laborer, from his perspective, is holding on to the money in advance for work that he hasn't done. How could that be allowed? Omar Rava. Rava says, Tisbara means you think of it yourself. You can analyze the logic yourself. Zilzule b'schirus mi asur. If there's a schirus agreement and the poel decides that he's desperate for funds and he's willing to accept upon himself to work at a cheaper rate, that's called lahozil or zilzule schirus, meaning instead of taking the market going price for work, he takes a cheaper price, he's willing to work at a lower price. That's not considered that he's getting money in advance as a loan. This is not a loan, but rather he accepted an agreement, and within the framework of that agreement, the Pole is willing to hire himself out at a cheaper price, and that's absolutely common. He's very desperate for Mo's, and he's willing to work at a cheaper price. So it's not the pshat that the 25% rate that he's getting in the harvest season is a payback of interest and benefit to the loan, for the loan, in lieu of the loan. No, it's just a different kind of arrangement. He's willing to take an arrangement in which he'll be, so to speak, underpaid, but that's okay with him, because he's desperate to get this job. That's not called ribbis. when a worker, a laborer, agrees to take less than the going rate, that's not called ribbis. Now again, you know, if you're going to be honest about it, it's not that the poel is so desperate for funds that he's willing to work at a cheaper rate. He's only willing to lower his price because he's getting all that money in advance. But nevertheless, this is not nira k'ribbis, because it was, you know, the lower rate was done within a framework of, well, how much are you charging me per day? You know, the employer says to the employee, how much do you charge for your labor per day? And he says, well, I'm willing to take one dinar per day, and instead of four, and I'll work for the next 100 days, which even encompasses within it the days of the harvest, because I need this job, and that's what I'm willing to take. The Gemara is not happy with this. The Gemara says, if you're telling me that hozolas schar poel, that when he lowers his rate and the laborer is willing to take a cheaper rate, that's not called ribbis, is then I don't understand. Maishna resha, maishna seifa. Why does the resha of this b'raisa insist that when the poel does not begin his work immediately, it's prohibited? And the Chachamim put their foot down and they said, we're not going to allow this to go on. That's nira k'ribbis. And in the Sefer, when he begins his work immediately, then they allowed it. Why? Why are they more strict in the Resha when he does not begin his work, and in the Sefer when he does begin his work? In both cases, you could apply the logic of zilzulei b'schiros, of hozolas schar poel. And Gemara answers, Resha deloka avid bahadei mehashta. In the resha, that he's not working immediately, he hasn't started his job, the Chachamim were machmir, and they prohibited this because it's clearly an advance in money. Clearly, the money that he's pocketing now for work that he hasn't even begun to do is money that's given to him as a loan, and the repayment of that loan is the work that he's going to do. Is michzei ki agar naterle. This is really similar to a case of, you know, instead of my paying you back now, I'm going to pay back later, and you'll get more for your buck, and I'm going to give you benefits. That's called schar amtaris mos, which is prohibited midrabbanan, but sefer the ka'avid ba'adei me'ashta, in a sefer where he begins his work immediately, then we don't have to define the money that's being paid to him as a loan, you know, this advance as a loan, but rather lo mixi ki agar notale. We can see it as payment for an agreement of 100 days. He's immediately working, so you can pay the poel, you know, at the end of that period of time. You can pay him at the beginning of the period of time, and even though he's paying him at the beginning of the time at a rate that's per day less than the going rate, that means zilzulei schiros. That means that the poel was mozil his schar pa'ula, and it doesn't look like ribbis. Going back to our Mishnah, the Mishnah says that if a person purchases pishtan, the buyer purchases flax, im haya mechuba v'karka v'tolash kol shukana. There's no need to do a kinyan on all the flax, the entire volume of flax that the buyer wants to purchase, but rather all he has to do is cut down a piece of pishtan, and that effectuates a kinyan on the entire vast amount of flax that's included in the sale. So the Gemara is not happy with this. The Gemara says, Mishum de Tolash Kol Shu Kana. How can you say because he ripped out, he detached or harvested one piece of pishtan, how does that operate as a Maisa Kinyan that should be chal for the entire volume of pishtan? He didn't move any of the other pishtan, and the balance of pishtan, insofar as loss of oklum, should not be nikne. Omer Rav Sheshes, Hochmayas Kinan. What's the case in our Mishnah? The Omer Le, the Mocher says, Tolkech Lech. Now for this we have to know the sugya above on Daf Mem Beis Amud Aleph with regard to Kinyani Karka. If the Mocher says to the Lokeach, do a Gdira, you mean set up a fence around the Karka, or Ne'ilo, lock up the fence, that's considered a Maisa Kinyan in Karka. In Tosi you'll see his Lech mentions this sugya. That's called Yipui Karka. Yipui Karka is an automatic kinyan with regard to karkos. And here, what the Mocher said to Lokech is, Lech Yapelecha Karka Kolshu. Why is this called Yipui Karka? When he cuts down some pishtan, That improves the karka. And how does that improve the karka? The answer is that now the karka, the land itself, is prepared for harisha. So again, even though, keep in mind, that the buyer here is not interested in acquiring ownership over the karka, that's not the purpose of this transaction, and even though the buyer only did an action on miktas mehkarka, on a small amount of the karka, nevertheless, kani kol masha oleha. He's kone everything that is pishton and is mechubar to the karka. And the Rashbam explains here that there are two chidushim in this answer of Rav Sheshes. Number one, kevon shapishta mechubar lekarka dino kekarka. Since at this point the sale is being effectuated on pishton and flax that's still attached, it's still growing from the ground. Therefore, it has the din, the status of karka, and therefore the chazaka that operates by karka in order to create a kinyan chazaka on karka is effective even with regard to the pishton, although he's selling in pishton and not karka. That's chiddush number one. And chiddush number two is that all you need is a very light kind of chazaka in karka. In other words, yipui karka by, you know, normally yipui karka requires a much more radical or fundamental or obvious kind of yipui karka. You know, you put up a fence around the karka so the animals can't come in and destroy the growth in the karka. That's something nikar, that's something obvious and something profound. But nevertheless, here all he did was he detached a small volume of pishton. That kinyan, which we call a chazaka kala, kala with a kuf, is enough for all the pishton that's growing in that area. The Ramban points out that according to the Rashbam, we're talking about a case where the pishton needs the karka. It's still growing for the karka. Because if that's not the case, then pishton, if it's ready to be cut and it's no longer nourishing, no longer growing from the karka, then it has a din of metaltalin and there's no kinyan chazaka on metaltalin. The Rashba, however, understands that according to the Rashbam, we're talking about a case where he's being kone, even the karka below the pishton. And that's why the Rashbam recognizes yipui karka as a maisa kinyan that is valid even as far as the pishton is concerned, because the transaction is chal even with regard to karka that is going along with the pishton. That pshat in the Rashbam of the Rashba is a little bit far-fetched, a little bit difficult, and more likely we're talking about a kinyan chazok that works for metaltalin, and the reason that's so is because in this case it's yesh b'chal masayim mona, so to speak. It means that we can borrow and imitate those kinyanim, a maisa kinyan that would be effective in karka, and apply it to metaltalin. And perhaps if we add the Ramban's qualification and his embellishment of the Rashbam, namely that the pishton still needs, you know, to be attached to the karka, it's not metaltalin, again, otherwise chazaka wouldn't operate, then we could certainly assume that despite the fact that the mocher, the seller, is not selling karka, not even an inch of karka, nevertheless the laws of kinyonim and the maisa kinyon is defined by the status of pishton right now at this moment as karka, because it's tzarech lekarka. So we'll stop here, and Amir Tzashem, for tomorrow we'll do the Mishnah here on Daf Pei Zayin Amud Aleph, onto the second Mishnah on the same Daf, but we'll start the first Mishnah.